Hey, denk dran, dass auch dein Immunsystem Hunger hat. Und probier's mal mit den Gesundheitszielen zur Ernährung in der App Auka Navida. Hol dir Tipps, Rezepte und Challenges für dein gesünderes Ich. Jetzt die App Auka Navida downloaden und loslegen. Auka Plus. Aus Liebe zur Gesundheit.
Welcome to another episode of Axe of the Blood God, US Gamer's official RPG podcast. I'm your host, Kat Bailey. Joining me, as always, my lovely co-host, Nadia Oxford.
Hello, I'm back. I wasn't here this week, so you can't really say I'm always here.
You're always here in spirit, though.
That's true.
Right now you're kind of taking a little break because you were gone on... You were busy working while we were all having, well, turkey or fish or whatever we have on Thanksgiving.
Do you have fish on Thanksgiving?
I have the fish on Thanksgiving because I'm a pesky pescatarian.
What kind of fish?
Usually we have herring because it's a white fish.
Yeah.
And if you season it up properly, it's almost like turkey. Or swordfish. It's really good as well. But this year we had salmon because we were eating with my partner's parents and that's what they were comfortable making.
Right. That makes sense. Yeah. Salmon's kind of a safe fish.
The secret of Thanksgiving is that as long as you have the right fixings, like you got the potatoes and the stuffing and, you know, sweet potatoes and cranberry sauce, the meat doesn't really matter.
That's true. Everyone fills up on the carbs mostly.
So, a busy week as usual over on US Gamer. Red Dead Online came out this week. I've been playing some of that. I talked a little bit about how Red Dead Redemption 2 needs to be treated as well as it's, well, it needs to be treated better than GTA 5, that's for sure. Because, you know, GTA 5 never got any single player DLC. It's actually kind of obnoxious.
Well, I didn't know that. And I mean, GTA Online is just massive.
On a more RPG-related note, Mike wrote about how Fallout 76 desperately needs any end game.
It needs a lot of things, unfortunately. But yes, that's a start.
Yeah, somebody in the comments wrote, let me see, why would anybody want to play this game to the end and then want to keep playing?
Ouch.
Which is kind of brutal, I gotta say.
Yeah, Bethesda has like kind of noticed that things are kind of screwed up, though, and they're like, oh, okay, we're going to be doing two massive updates in December, and maybe that'll come to something.
Yeah, I was talking to Tom Ori, who's our guides editor / managing editor, and like we're kind of the agreement that as long as Bethesda supports it, it can probably ultimately get on its feet.
Yeah.
Like a lot of these online service games ultimately do. It's just so many of them come out in what you might call an early access state and don't really come into their own until like 2 years later.
Yeah, they kind of come out in alpha almost. But yeah, of course, you have No Man's Sky, which is the primary example of a game that, of course, I've heard the argument that, yes, No Man's Sky was boring, but it wasn't utterly broken the way that Fallout 76 is.
No Man's Sky just didn't have anything.
Yeah,
like, there was nothing to do. It was pretty boring, actually. And now it has, like, an actual loop, and it has an actual kind of focus, which is funny, because, like, the crux of No Man's Sky is exploring, but the best content involves hanging around one solar system. So I'm playing Pokemon Let's Go right now, and I'm enjoying it, but it doesn't seem, like, particularly deep.
That's what I didn't think at first. How far have you gotten?
I mean, I'm heading to the SSN, so I'm really not that far into
Okay,
it.
So yeah, you're still kind of in the first steps of the game, and, like I said, I said this fully in jest, and I also mean it in, like, half-truth. It's not exactly Dark Souls, don't mistake me for saying that, but, I found, like, good reason to keep on playing after the game. Like, the master, battles are actually, they're quite difficult. Facing off against Mewtwo is quite different because, you know, you go up against Mewtwo and it's not like you can just lob the Master Ball at him right away and catch him. You actually have to beat him raid style, as in, like you do in Pokemon Go. So, I don't know what my Pokemon were at when I beat, the Elite Four, you know, 40, 50, something like that. And Mewtwo was like 70 something, God only knows. And, he just like demolished my poor team because, they were not prepared for that, and it's not like I could just, like, take my turn to throw the Pokeball at him and say, okay, it's over, because even if I did get, like, a little bit of HP off him, he'd just use Recover. So I need to have a good, strong, balanced team if I'm going to go after him.
I think the thing a lot of people feel, the problem a lot of people have with Pokemon, or at least me, is that Pokemon presents a lot of hardcore mechanics, and it rewards you getting up to level 100 and maxing mm-hmm. out the level cap of your monster. But it doesn't provide a lot of content to reward people who actually do that. The assumption is, oh, if you're doing that, you're probably going to battle. But right. I think for me, like, I am less interested in PvP these days. I'm much more interested in kind of PvE, playing against, you know, the Pokemon World Tournament or the Battle Frontier or that kind of thing. And we haven't had anything like that in actually a while. I keep lionizing Black 2 and White 2. Like, usually they just put in the Battle Tower.
Yeah.
And so I think a lot of the hardcore fans are looking at Pokemon Let's Go and just kind of shrugging. It's like, oh, I got to the end of the story. But
I
can catch some legendaries, whatever.
Well, you can go up against all the gym leaders again. They have harder Pokemon. They have more Pokemon. They have full rosters. The Elite Four have filled out rosters, and they're all harder. And, of course, your Blue 2.0 rival is he's harder. And you got Blue himself. You got Green. You've got I haven't unlocked Red because you got to get, like, 6 Master Titles before you can do that. So there's a bit to do.
Yeah, I think it can work better because it, in Pokemon Let's Go, you can't just immediately import your old team, which is what I do with every version of Pokemon.
Right.
So I do actually have to grind and level guys up. So maybe the endgame content is going to be a little more satisfying this time around.
Yeah, I'd be interested to hear what you think.
Yeah, I'm going to try and finish it and write from the perspective of a hardcore, quote-unquote, Pokemon player. Though, at this point, actual Pokemon players are so hardcore that I don't know if I can count myself as hardcore anymore.
They're going to call you a baby cat. They're going to laugh at you.
I'm a filthy casual Pokemon player. They're going to take away my license. I'm going to be stripped of my master my master title.
Your Pokemon license. Going to rip it up in front of you.
And, of course, the PlayStation Classic came out this week. And, yeah, not great, unfortunately.
Yeah.
They made a lot of mistakes with this, no doubt, from the games that they selected to the fact that half of them are PAL versions, which means that they're 50 hertz, which basically a lot of them play slower.
That is there any reason why they did that? I haven't read up on that yet.
It's not entirely clear. Sony's not really talking about it. I mean, I know some people at Sony. I'm curious to hear what they have to say about it, though they're not really talking about it right now.
What a weird decision. This whole thing has been a weird decision from start to finish. It's like, okay, PlayStation Classic, hey, what a great idea. And everything else since that has just gone downhill.
It feels like they looked at the SNES Classic and the NES Classic success and said, why don't we do that? But at every turn, they were just kind of throwing up roadblocks or taking shortcuts or just not giving it the attention it really needs to become a sensation.
Yeah.
But I don't know, like, maybe the PlayStation Classic would never have really become a sensation like the NES Classic, because the NES Classic was at this kind of perfect inflection point where, like, I mean, if you look at the way that the pop culture mindset kind of narrows going way back to the 80s,
mm-hmm.
like, I mean, people remember the NES because there was something approaching a monoculture back in the 70s and 80s, and now that's...
Yeah.
And even by the mid-90s, you had so many more options in terms of consoles, mm-hmm. Video games, entertainment in general. Like, cable was in full swing in 1995, right?
Yeah, wow. But no, you're right. The NES was just one of those things where everybody had one in their living room.
Yeah. I mean, it was the Wii of its day.
It really was.
Even parents were buying it.
It was the Wii before the Wii.
Make sure to go check out Mike's review over on the site. And make sure to check out Katie's review of Persona 3 Dancing in Moonlight and Persona 5 Dancing in Starlight as well. And speaking of Persona, we are going to be doing something a little different this week with the Top 25 RPG Countdown, which is going into number 9 this week.
Getting
down there. First, Acts of the Blood God. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever podcasts are sold. Guess what, Nadia? We're on Spotify now.
Oh, hooray. Yay. You can Spotify us.
We're one of the cool kids now. It's very exciting.
Yay.
Follow me on Twitter at @_Catbot. Nadia's @NadiaOxford. And if you want to comment on the show, leave a comment on the show notes or drop me a line at cat.bailey@usgamer.net. Or, you know, just send me a message. My DMs are open. It's very dangerous of me to say that, but I'm curious to see what comes of it.
You're brave.
All right, let's go on and talk a little bit about number 9 on our top 25 RPG countdown. All right, Nadia, we're doing something a little different this week. And so I suppose I should talk a little bit about the process of the top 25 RPG countdown.
Mm-hmm.
So the way that this originally came together was that basically I drafted my initial list and we hashed over it for quite a long time. I swapped a bunch of games in and out. Like, we argued about some things. Like, I really wanted, the things that I really wanted to get right was I wanted to get the top 10 right. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to make sure that the games that need to be on the list were on the list. But also, I made the list in reaction a little bit to some of the other lists that had come out. Lists that had, for example, listed Skyrim at number one of their RPG list.
Yes, yes.
Which galled me. And I know that lists are just primarily troll jobs, but I couldn't deal. I needed to make my own list. And I also wanted to kind of like highlight games that you wouldn't normally find on the top of a top 25 RPG list, but maybe deserve some more attention, like, you know, Tactics Ogre or Final Fantasy V. Like, I wanted to take a look at some of the games that, like, some of the series that normally people would be like, oh, Skyrim should go in here. I'm like, well, should Skyrim go here? Or perhaps Morrowind should go here.
We teach the controversy here at Acts of the Blood God.
So we've had this list for quite a while now. And it's been more or less locked in place. But one of the problems that we've been having is, do we put Persona 4 or Persona 5 at number 9? Like, I think that it fits right there, right at that spot. But, well, a couple things. First of all, Persona 5 has only been out just over a year. And I've been trying to avoid putting in games that came out within the past year, because one of my metrics is, does this game hold up? And it's hard to make an argument for whether Persona 5 holds up. It's one of the reasons that I put Divinity Original Sin on the list and not Divinity Original Sin 2.
Right.
Divinity Original Sin 2 is probably a better game. You can put Divinity Original Sin 2 right there if you feel like it should be there instead of Divinity Original Sin. Either one, I think, is practically interchangeable.
We allow it.
To be honest. Yeah. I'll allow it. I'll allow it. Persona 4, Persona 5, kind of a more interesting case because Persona 5 is a very different game from Persona 4.
It is.
So I think that I, for a long time, was kind of like, okay, Persona 4 obviously then needs to be there because it's been here for quite a long time. But the closer and closer we've gotten to actually doing the entry, the more I've been like, but should it be Persona 5? Is Persona 5 a better game? Not a better game than Persona 4?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've played a lot of Persona 5 at this point. I'm very impressed by it. Should I go against, like, what I originally set out and pick a game that came out friggin' last year to put on the top 10 RPGs of all time? Anyway, yeah, so we're going to have a debate about this.
Yeah, you've been in a bit of turmoil over this, and I understand why. I mean, I actually played, as you know, Persona 4 around this and Persona 5 kind of side by side for a while there. And I can understand why it's kind of a tight race.
But anyway, I thought that it would be a good idea, Nadia, to talk this out and just kind of figure out, like, which one should go on this list, Persona 4 or Persona 5? Because I think there's arguments for both. Not going to put Persona 3 on this list, sorry guys, because while I think Persona 3 has a good story, I don't think it, I think it suffers from a lack of a definitive version. Like, I can't easily point somebody to, you know, Persona 3 Portable or Persona 3 Fez. Like, I get this question all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Which one should I play? I'm like, kind of neither. Like, we need the one that, we need the definitive one, because both of those versions are very flawed at this point. Whereas I can point to a definitive version of Persona 4 or Persona 5. It makes it a lot easier. And plus, I think that Persona 4 is a better game ultimately than Persona 3. That's me. I'm on that train.
I think Katie might hit you for that, but
I don't know that she'll hate me, but I know that she disagrees with me, and that's fine. That's her prerogative.
That is the Katie prerogative trademark.
Absolutely. So before we get into this, let's talk a little bit about why exactly Persona like resonates so much. I mean, so if you look at the entire kind of Shin Megami Tensei milieu, right? Mm-hmm. You got the core series like SMT4. You've got like Nocturne. You've got Persona 1 and 2. You've got A Strange Journey. I mean, there's a huge number of games in this franchise. But Persona 3, Persona 4, and Persona 5, those are the games. And why, Nadia, do you think they resonate so much? Is it just because they are high school anime comedies?
No, if that were the case, I probably would have dropped them real fast, because I just, if I'm going to play a high school anime comedy, you better give me reason to stick around, because you and I have been, we've been around like long enough to see so many anime high school comedies come and go that we are probably thoroughly sick of them unless they really offer something special. And I think Persona manages to do that. I think I personally love the I generally love a combination of the mundane with, you know, the fantastical, you know what I mean? And Persona tackles that really well with like, oh, you got school, but you also get to like travel underneath this like subway station that's like actually a representation of the collective minds of everyone in Japan, and you know, it's named after like the Kabbalah, of course, because of course it is, and there's like all these like demons from different cultures just slumming around there because of course they are, and you can talk to them and you can make friends with them, or if you don't want to do that day, you could just do drama club.
They really lean into the whole union thing of the collective consciousness, but also Japanese mythology. It's distinct in that way, that's for sure.
It really is, and I really enjoyed about that. Plus, I think Persona 5 in particular had such an amazing style that it was hard to look away from.
I think that Persona 3, Persona 4, and Persona 5 are as popular as they are for the same reason that Blizzard games are as popular as they are, which is to say that they manage to walk a very tight, difficult tightrope where they can grab in, they have enough depth that they can grab in really hardcore fans. They have something to chew on, right?
Yeah.
So many games you play and there's no there. But like you play a game like, I don't know, StarCraft, and it has some of the most intense in-depth strategy you'll find. Persona 4, Persona 3, 4, and 5 don't skimp on the actual RPG mechanics. It doesn't try to be overly simple, and yet it is accessible to a mainstream audience in a way that the rest of the games in the Shin Megami Tensei series are not. It's tough for me to recommend Strange Journey to a random person.
Right.
Because it is pretty dang hardcore. It's a hard game. It can be hard to get around your mind around. It can be hard to go like parse all of these dense menus and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And SMT games, like SMT4 is another example, traditionally do not pull their punches, and I think that's cool, and I respect that about it. But I have a much easier time recommending, say, Persona 4 or Persona 5 to a friend of mine who doesn't really normally play these games, but maybe likes anime.
It's they're very strangely enough, the Persona is quite accessible, especially in the way that it's very structured. It tells you what to do day by day, and even though you still have an element of choice, you're not wandering aimlessly anywhere on an open world, and as silly that might sound, it actually, I find some people are actually very intimidated by open worlds and kind of like the structure of just the day-to-day literal kind of predictability of being told where to go and what to do, and, you know, here's school, do you want to go to work or do you want to do this, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but at the same time, you can have a serious case of FOMO with these games, where to the point where like you become invested in wanting to make sure that you're living your best CPU life.
That's true.
I remember when I played Persona 4 for the first time, I was sweating bullets with every single day to the point where I was just reading a day-by-day guide to make sure that I was getting everything I possibly could. This time around with Persona 5, I'm not doing that, mm-hmm. and I'm still regretting it because I'm like, I look at the list of things that people are doing, and I'm like, what is that?
How did you do that? I'm a little more laid back when it comes to that kind of thing. I'm just like, I know I can't see everything, so I don't try.
I mean, you got to have that attitude kind of going into it, right? Because it feels like you're cheating yourself by using a guide, because if you're using a guide, you're not exploring and discovering, and you're just following a rote step-by-step path, and it's almost like you're not playing it.
Yeah, and I mean, part of the fun of games like this is talking to someone who's played them and learning their experience was in some ways totally different from yours.
And there's always so much to do in these games, and so much to find. Mm-hmm. On a regular basis, like dumb things like, today I'm going to build a model.
Yeah, I know, like, I know, for example, you built like all the models, but I didn't. I didn't care enough to do the models, but there you go. It's something I didn't care about, but you cared about.
Or beating the beef bowl challenge.
Oh, I can't remember if I did that. I did try, but I don't know if I ever did it.
But Persona 4 and Persona 5 are pretty similar in that regard. Which is why I can kind of feel comfortable being like, yeah, like they either one could probably be in this spot because there's not that much separating them ultimately.
Right. Yeah.
I think there are arguments to be made for both of them, but at base, like from a fundamental standpoint, they're very similar games.
Yeah. I think it really comes down to how, you know, one's presentation versus another's story. Like they're so similar yet so different in weird ways.
Looking at Persona 4 and Persona 5, I think that another thing that I think there is kind of a power to this narrative of high schoolers who are like kids who are going to school by day and then fighting monsters by night. Like you see that over and over and over again. It the formula works with Harry Potter.
Mm-hmm.
It worked with Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I mean, how many supernatural high school things have you seen? I mean, freaking Twilight, for God's sake.
Oh, like,
it resonates with people.
Yes. Oh, I'm so mad about Twilight sometimes. Anyway.
And for, I think, Western audiences, like, it's that kind of fun of seeing what it's, to at least get a glimpse of what it's like to actually live in Japan or go to a Japanese high school.
Yeah, I do like how the series is very, very Japanese in that, like, I learned things about Japan, and I think when I was playing Persona 4, I would ask you about certain things that you knew that I didn't.
Though it's different because the Japanese high schoolers that I knew when I was teaching were always busy going to cram school.
So they didn't have time to go to the underworld and fight demons.
Correct. They did not have time to actually fight monsters in Japanese high school. They were basically going to second school at night or clubs.
Yeah, yeah. You could go to club in Persona 4. Like, I think there was a big drama around the drama club, but I didn't choose drama club.
Yeah, so I was in the band.
Yeah, I was in the band too.
And you could be in student council in Persona 3?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But in Persona 5, you couldn't be in any of the clubs. And that actually rubbed some people the wrong way.
Yeah, that's right. There weren't any clubs, were there?
No. Well, I think the narrative is that the main character is a troublemaker, therefore
right.
they wouldn't be welcome in the clubs.
No, they were very much ostracized for who they were. So even if they were welcome, they probably wouldn't want to hang around. And I think his caretaker, at least at the very beginning of the game, was like, after school, like directly after school, you got to come back here because you're on probation.
I think in both Japan and in a lot of countries, high school has a certain power. Good or bad, you look back on it as a very like distinct phase of your life.
Yeah.
And you can look back on it with a kind of, wow, man, those were such great times and I made such wonderful friends. And I think a lot of games like Persona or Buffy or whatever capture that, where like, the characters always have these really strong friend groups and they always mm-hmm. build these relations and they have romantic relationships that can go well or go badly. And then in the end, they transition and go off to college and the whole world like lies ahead of them. There's a power to that.
Yeah.
And it can work if you have good memories of high school, and it can work if you have bad memories of high school. Like, I look back on my high school experience and like, it's a little bittersweet because I never had anything even approaching to, like, you know, I was hardly exactly what you would call popular. Uh-huh. But, you know, I had my good times. And there are times where it's like, oh, so this is what, like, a good high school experience could hypothetically look like.
I was very much the same way. I went to a very nerdy school to begin with. So, I mean, that's where I learned how to use the internet. And I actually learned what the hell the internet was. I was actually part of, like, some premier program that Ontario was starting. Like, someone came up to me and said, hey, we have this cool thing called the internet. You want to learn about it? And I'm like, sure. Okay. So I learned how to use the internet. It's all been all downhill since then.
Yeah, I was pretty much living on the internet by high school, but I was lucky enough to be in band class, and that's where all the nerds were, and so I did get to hang out and be exposed to things like Magic the Gathering and Pokemon and Smash Brothers and D&D and Evangelion, which, by the way, Evangelion's coming back.
Yeah, it's coming to Netflix.
Yeah. So in that regard, I think Persona 3, 4, and 5 tap into something very powerful, that very powerful form of nostalgia, which is why I think it appeals to a lot of people. And interestingly, I think all three of them are fairly similar to kind of Western RPGs in a lot of respects, because even though you don't customize your avatar, in many respects, they're not really their own character. They have a backstory, but they're totally a silent protagonist, and you are making their decisions for them.
Yes.
And so there is that additional layer of investment that you have in that particular character.
Yeah, it was like, put it this way, the protagonists for Persona 4 and 5, and I'm guessing 3 as well, they have names. And if you ask me what are their names, I could not tell you off the top of my head. I think 5...
You know
5...
what Persona 4's protagonist is named, right?
No.
4. You.
Oh, for...
But it's spelled Y-U.
Of course it is.
Yeah, it's you. I mean, so it's like self-insert, right? I mean, you are meant to feel like you're in that character skin, and you have supernatural powers, and you're making all these friends with these fun, vibrant characters, which, by the way, that's another thing with 3, 4, and 5. 3 and 4 have fairly similar archetypes for their casts, but 4 and 5, well, I guess 3, 4, and 5 all have fairly similar archetypes for their classes, but they're all sketched out in just different enough ways, and they all have interesting enough backstories that you can't help but become invested in them, and right?
Yeah, yeah. I think Persona 5, the characters, the individual characters had darker backstories versus Persona 4's. But yeah, they all kind of fit into certain archetypes, definitely.
I always liked that Persona 4 like was brighter and more fun and maybe not as dark, because Persona 5 gets into some, both Persona 3 and 5 get into some like pretty heavy territory.
Yeah.
Whereas it's a little easier to identify with some of the stuff that's going on in Persona 4.
In Persona 4, I think there's a daily quest you could do where you make friends with a cat. And
yes,
I made really good friends with the cat.
It wasn't a cat, it was like a fox in like a temple.
No, you can make, there was the fox, that was the hermit, Arcana, but there was a cat standing by the river, and you could visit the cat every day, and eventually it would have a kitten, and you would talk to the kitten, and it would say meep.
That's adorable.
It was very cute. But the fox was there, yes. I made friends with him as well.
The brilliance of that format of going day by day and hanging out with the characters in the game is that it dramatically increases your investment in the world, and dramatically increases your investment in the individual characters to the point where you're like, oh man, we had such good times. And I felt like I really did get to know that character over time, and I got to see their own little emotional arc play out, and there's a satisfying catharsis at the end that ultimately does have an impact on how it all plays out. So I think that's all impactful. And then if you look at the battle systems, the battle system works because it's a strategic rather than it manages to mix both strategic and tactical elements in a way that a lot of modern RPGs aren't as good at. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of RPGs these days, like Final Fantasy has become like a pure action game, basically. Yeah. Like very light strategic elements, but it doesn't really matter. And other games get so involved in strategic elements that the tactical elements start to lose any kind of meaning. But in Persona 4 and 5, you'll have you'll go ahead and you'll spend a lot of time merging your personas. You have it ties in really nicely into the relationships that you are developing in the game because it powers up those particular personas.
Right.
It feels really good to get a particularly powerful persona that you get to keep for quite a while.
Yes.
That gives you lots of coverage. But then when you're fighting in the battles, it's not just a matter of being really powerful. Often these bosses have their own little trick to them that you have to kind of figure out. And usually multiple phases, and it can be actually pretty stressful even if you're relatively powerful.
Yeah, I think I had a really terrible time against in Persona 4. The false the dude who you think is actually the murderer but isn't, and you fight him, and he has that weird ass angel peace love hippie angel thing going on, and that was a real bitch of a fight. I had a hard time with that one because I think it's like he'd regenerate or something like that.
Yeah, a lot of people were pointing out actually that that's one of the hardest fights in the entire game.
Yeah,
and that. The last couple fights don't even actually compare to that one because
no, when they happen I'm like, oh okay, that's it, I guess. Great music though.
They're really complicated, and like I said, they take place over multiple phases, and they'll do things like they'll take control of your characters, or they'll or they'll wipe out stat buffs, or they'll buff themselves, so you have to counter it kind of takes a lot of the best elements of Dragon Quest and Final Fantasy and merges them together while also adding in a Pokemon like elemental weakness aspect to it, though that doesn't apply as much against bosses because obviously that would make it a little easy.
Yeah, just a bit. Yeah, that's one thing I actually really like five above four is that you can talk to demons to try to befriend them. It's not just like, oh hey, you won a card after a battle in four, which is like, oh great, I'm playing Pokemon now, I guess, like Pokemon the card game.
So we've kind of established like these are good games. Like I think Persona 3, 4, 5, they're all like really good in their own way. They all tell, I would say, pretty interesting stories. Like I have a pretty firm grasp on like what Persona 5 wants to be and its characters at this point, and its battle system. I think it does a lot of really interesting things, and they all have kind of their own personality, which I really like. But when I look at the three, I think the one that's the defining one of the bunch is still Persona 4, and let me kind of explain why. So when Persona 4 came out in 2008, it was kind of disregarded by people who really liked Persona 3 because they're like, oh, it's just more Persona 3. And it changed up the format a bit. It didn't have the Tartarus where you're going floor by floor by floor. Like you could just bang out a dungeon and then get back to, hanging out with your friends and everything. And superficially, the characters seemed relatively similar. And the story didn't seem quite as dark as that of Persona 3. And I know that I'm making a lot of... I'm making a really good case for Persona 4 right now. But when Persona 4 Golden came out in 2013, the popular opinion on it, I think, really changed. And it kind of became like one of the Vita's like main success stories, I want to say.
Yes.
Like it...
Vietnamese life, all right.
It felt like a lot of people turned and said, no, in fact, Persona 4 was the best. And that's, I think, because people were given a chance to, I don't know, put on their glasses that cut through the fog and
nice analogy.
And enjoy Persona 4 on its own terms. And in that they discovered that, in fact, the characters were really good and really well sketched out, mm-hmm. and that it managed to stand on its own in a way from Persona 3 in the way that it moved from a kind of more of a city port kind of area to a more rural area, right?
Right.
While expanding upon like a lot of the activities that you could do, refining the battle system, telling a very different kind of story that like people might go, oh, it's a Scooby-Doo murder mystery. But it really cuts to the heart of a lot of the darkness that there is today. Like Persona 5 yes. wants to tell a story that's like really relevant and wants, it's beating you over the head with all of these themes, like
one after another.
It's almost like a parable or uh-huh. something like that for like various ills of society. Whereas one of the main villain of Persona 4, and I was kind of looking back on him, is Adachi.
Uh-huh.
And he spends the entire game being this nerdy, unassuming detective. And you're like, oh, that's kind of, you know, whatever. But when he's unmasked, you discover like just kind of how dark he is. And
yeah, very, very nihilistic in a very, really terrible way.
Not just a nihilist, but a misogynist.
Yes.
Someone who approaches, like, the first murder that happens is because he was trying to basically, you know, harass her sexually and right. trying to get with her. And then when she didn't go along with him, he kills her.
Yeah.
Like, it's dark and it honestly, in a very horrible way, like fits where we are as a society. Like its themes really resonate.
Sadly, so
there's kind of a mundanity to how evil he is, but in a good way. Like the banality of his evil resonates maybe a little more than with a, you know, somebody who like decides that, oh, I'm going to destroy God, or do
yes.
you see what I'm saying? Or even yeah. like in Persona 5, where it's like, I run everything. Try and take me on, kid. I'm an evil, powerful billionaire asshole, right?
Right, which is also very topical, but I see where you're coming from.
Yeah, he felt real to me. Like,
yeah, exactly.
I feel like a lot of us have known an Adachi. Like, maybe he's not a serial killer. But
hopefully.
But the person who's kind of like a goof and unassuming, but when you like pull back the layers, you're like, ooh, ah, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I'm trying to remember exact moments of the game that kind of that relate this, but I remember looking back at certain instances in the game after I discovered who the culprit was, and saying to myself, yeah, I the signs were always there, and I just kind of willfully ignored them because I assumed he was just, oh, some weird, goofy-ass guy. But no, there was a method to his madness.
And there's a melancholy and to Persona 4 that I really like. Like, I think that there's a place for Persona 5 having, you know, in all caps, a message.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think that's cool. Like, I like my media to have a message. I'm a big Star Trek fan, actually. Mm-hmm. But with Persona 4, like, you see, it's examining a lot of different themes in kind of fairly interesting ways. Like, things like the way Junesse comes into town.
Right.
And how... Nanako?
Nanako.
Yeah, I can never remember her name. I can never remember any of their
poor
names.
Or Nanako. Nanako-chan.
How she is... like so lonely, and you know her father's always gone, and she's like obsessed with this freaking store, and like, man, that's depressing, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. She's like she's like a little girl who has nothing in her life except a commercial.
Yeah, and you're trying to help her out, and then you look at the rest of your schoolmates, and you look at especially like another reason that I really like Persona 4 is the relationship between Yukiko and Chie.
Mm-hmm.
And like both of them look at each other and they see kind of what they want to be, or they see their own failings. Like
right.
Chie looks at Yukiko and is like, if only I could be like as pretty as you and like on top of things and smart and like and just totally having a handle, like totally organized. And Yukiko, of course, is looking at Chie and being like, I'm stuck in this horrible life that I can't escape. And you are so like with it and carefree and awesome and everything. And
right.
I totally want to have sex with you. That's not canon at all. Nah, cough, cough.
No, but I could, I'm sure it's like very strong fanon. I can see it.
Does Persona 5 have anything even close to the relationship between Chie and Yukiko?
I'm trying to think. Let's see. No, here's the thing with Persona 5. I feel like its story and its character bonds aren't quite as strong as Persona 4's were. And I will gladly say that as the case, particularly the story. Because as you say, Persona 5 has a message. And if Persona 5 is a game, it's a megaphone on full blast. Whereas Persona 5 has something very important to say. Persona 4 also has something important to say, but it allows itself to be a little quieter, maybe because it comes from a time when things didn't seem quite as bad as they are now. You know what I mean? But yeah.
I mean, things were bad 10 years ago. The friggin' world economy was on the verge of collapsing.
Yeah, it's all been pretty terrible, but not a comedy of horrible disasters every single day like it is now, I suppose. But I'm trying to think of like, see, as much as I love the characters in Persona 5, I don't think they had that same chemistry going on.
Well, I look at in Persona 5, a lot of the characters are used to kind of make a point.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, so you have An, right?
Yeah.
And An is, she's a model and she's dealing with that kind of horrible side of that particular industry. Like, she's a vector for telling that kind of story. Or you have Makoto, who I think she's the student council one. The one
Makoto is actually, she's really cool. She has like a really interesting story arc, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, she is a lot of about the achievement culture in Japan, right?
Yes.
Where you gotta have perfect grades, you gotta do all of the things. And then you have the girl whose mother ends up dying, and she's a shut-in, and
that's
she's
Futaba.
Dealing with,
yeah.
And so each one is kind of hitting on a particular thing that is happening
exactly.
in Japan in a different way, right?
Right.
And that's an interesting way to tell a story. And I think that the relationships are fun and everything. I think Morgana's like one of my favorite kind of mascot characters. I like
Morgana
better
great.
Than Teddy.
Yeah, definitely less pervy than Teddy, which is a big thing.
Morgana, it's like there's a sadness to Morgana because like, so I've known a friend. I have a friend who's had memory loss, and like that feeling of you've lost something and you don't even necessarily know who you are, like is like it's resonant. It's not kind of there's a melancholy to Teddy as well, but Teddy as a character is also kind of pervy and silly.
Yeah.
Always with the perviness.
Definitely with the perviness. But yeah, Morgana doesn't have that quite as much going on. She I keep calling her a she, even though like the character
it's because of the voice.
It is. It's Cassandra. I forget her last name, but he is. He has like this crush on Lady An that he calls her Lady An, and I find is actually more cute than pervy.
Hmm. I think Persona 5 does a lot of good things. For example, it has the dungeons are much better. I think. Ultimately,
yes, I find that ultimately as a game to play, Persona 5. Is to me the better game. It has better visuals, better sound. The soundtrack's just phenomenal. And the dungeons, I think, are really interesting. They're really well designed. I like the fact that demon negotiation is back. But as far as the bond between the characters go, it's a little bit looser than it is in 4. So I think that counts for something. And I also think the problem is that, let's face it, Persona 5's localization wasn't as good as it could have been.
No.
And 4's was excellent.
I think that's one of the big things that's kind of holding me back with Persona 5 is when so we talked about this last year and we were like going, so Persona 5's localization, is it that bad? And
right.
we were kind of uncertain about that because when it comes down to it, it largely gets the job done. And we've seen some truly horrific localizations, but
it's definitely passable.
I don't think there's any denying that it is not up to the traditional standard of Atlas. It has, it definitely needed another editing pass. There's a lot of awkward phrasing and such in there. I think that the voice acting isn't quite as good as in Persona 4. Like, Persona 4, like, gave us people like Troy Baker, who played Kanji and is now, like, much in demand. Like, it had legit good voice acting in a lot of respects. And Persona 5, in many ways, isn't quite up to that level. And so it's, like, it's kind of a bummer because you feel like you really needed an A-plus localization job to truly do that script justice.
Yeah, you did. And I have to give the voice actors credit. I think they did the best of what they had.
They really went at it. Like, they were just like, energetic as possible.
They did. And I think they were the ones who ultimately, they did sell the story for me. That they just, when you stopped to read the words they were saying, you were like, wait, that doesn't really sound like it should. But when you heard it, you were like, okay, that's passable.
Yeah. So when I look at, I know like more than a few localization specialists, and they are all pretty down on the Persona 5 script. And it's like, ooh, yeah, like hearing it from people. And I'm not just talking about people who are like, you know, quote unquote, jealous of not being able to localized Persona 5, which I've seen some speculation on that on like various subreddits and that. No, these are people who are like in high level localization positions, trust me, and have at various points had connections to projects like big time RPG projects, and they kind of killed it. They were killing it to me, and I'm like, oh, that's a bummer. That is
a real bummer. Were pretty mad about that.
Yeah. So we've been talking about Persona 4 and kind of knocking down Persona 5. Nadia, like, you were like, I think we should put Persona 5 on this list over Persona 4. Like, make your case.
Well, it's not like I would, like, just thump my heels on the floor if you said, no, it's going to be Persona 4, because I totally see where you're coming from. When you're talking about an RPG, yes, localization matters. Yes, the bond between the characters matters. And taking a step down from those two things is, it's not exactly something an RPG series should do. But like I said, I just find that Persona 5 is the more interesting looking game, the more interesting sounding game. I just had a blast playing it. There's so much to do, just so many characters to interact with. And I'm also a city girl, so I just really love running around Shibuya. I had just a really good time doing crazy things like, hey, you can go fishing in a moat. Like, holy crap, I can fish in a moat. And
I mean, you can fish in Persona 4, too.
Yeah, you can, although the fishing mechanics are a lot better in 5, just putting it out there. And the fact that you are fishing in an Edo area moat, and that's in the middle of Tokyo. I was like, holy crap.
Yeah, they really refined so much about Persona 5. Like, if you look at the actual battle system, for example, like bringing in the demon discussions, the demon negotiation system was a really nice touch. I think that harkens back to the original, the original Shin Megami Tensei games.
Yeah,
like that had kind of gotten lost in Persona 4. And like I'm kind of back and forth on the dungeons though, because they're I think they are much more elaborate and benefit from being bespoke, but they can overstay their welcome just a tiny bit.
I can't remember if they have to be all completed in one day, or can you come back to them? I think you can.
I mean,
come
some
back
of them,
them
you can complete in one day, because like if you try and do that, like sometimes you just come up against an artificial barrier and you got to come back tomorrow.
Right. Okay. I remember now. I see where you're coming from. The dungeons can be very long. I think that's something that happens in a lot of JRPGs these days, but I also, I don't know, just remembering how I just blazed through most of the dungeons in Persona 4 and it didn't make much of an impression on me, and combine that with the fact that, like I said, the demons came printed on cards, I didn't really feel like I got a good chance to really connect to Persona 4's world and its demons. And I feel like we're talking about a Persona game, that's a pretty big overlook.
Trust in the heart of the cards.
Oh, God.
I think the reason that they did that with Persona 5 was that they were looking at people who were basically shotgunning Persona 4's dungeons in one day so that they could get back to doing things during at school, which, I mean,
I gotta go to school.
Guilty as charged, right? I mean, I wanted to get through that dungeon as fast as possible so that I didn't miss any of the connections that I was making, right? Mm-hmm.
That's fair.
So here's the counterpoint that I'm going to make to this. My counterpoint is that, in fact, the dungeons aren't the main part of Persona. And they're fine, and the battle system is generally good, and crafting Personas is fun, and the battles can be really a lot of fun. But to me, the heart of the appeal of Persona is going to school.
That's an interesting way of putting it. But yes, I see where you're coming from, because, I mean, if it wasn't school, well, it would just be Shin Megami Tensei, wouldn't it?
Or something like that, or just another RPG, I suppose. Yeah. But I'm always happiest when the school bell rings and it's like, what do I do now? Do I go and do I hit the batting cages? I guess it would be Yakuza. do I hit the batting cages, or do I go fishing, or do I go take a bath? Do I watch a video? Do I read a book? Do I go on a date? I need to, there's a fortune teller in Shibuya. I'm going to go meet her and find out what's up with her and build up my social bond with her. In Persona 4, like, I think one of the, like, to get back to what we were talking about earlier, like, why did Persona 4 suddenly become so much popular with Persona 4 Golden? Well, one of the reasons is that you could have a social link with Adachi. I mean, that was a brilliant touch.
I never did that. Have you ever done that?
So I didn't do it because I beat Persona 4 Golden first. Like, I didn't beat the original Persona 4. So I was beating Persona 4 Golden, and I kind of ignored the Adachi social link. And so when I found out that he was the killer, I was like, oh, I should have done that social link.
Oh, man. That would have been great. I'd have to look that up because I'm really curious how that goes. I mean, people like make fun of me because I made a social link with Marie. So
do people make fun of you for that?
Oh, yeah, all the time. They're like, Nadia, on Twitter, if I say anything about her. It's like, hey, I scored with her. What do you want? I'm the winner here, not you.
I like the characters like Marie and all of them. The ones who are in the Velvet Room who, like, want to come out and experience the real world.
Yeah, that's exactly who she is. And she had, like, a nice dungeon actually kind of a very melancholy dungeon at the end of the game, if you were A-Link with her and you find out who she is and all that.
I miss the content. I feel bad. I need more content in my life.
She is, I don't know if I want to spoil it, actually, so.
I mean, we're spoiling everything. This is
That's
a spoiler
discussion.
That's
true. We went ahead, and she is, I can't remember the name of the legend, but there's a Japanese legend about a maiden who comes from the moon and, like, you know, has to return or something like that. So she was kind of the personification of that. And I just remember the last dungeon that you do that's, like, finding out, like, what happens to her, because after you finish the game she disappears, and I can't remember the name of the other lady who's in the Velvet Room, but she, like, tries to help you find her, and when you find out where she is, you have to go through this dungeon with this really sad music, and you eventually find her, but it's all very kind of depressing.
The Adachi social link, I actually ended up watching it on YouTube, and you've kind of cut to the heart of, like, who he is, where he came from, like, what his upbringing is like, why he is kind of an awful person about women. Mm-hmm. And at the end, you can actually, if you get your social link high enough with him, you could actually help him get away with the crime.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
For a minute, I thought you were going to be like, you can help him, like, turn around. And, although, no. I think by that point, he's killed a bunch of people, so can't really help him turn around at that point.
Though, apparently, he is redeemed a little bit at the end of the game, interestingly, because he's cheering. He's among the voices cheering for you when you're fighting, like, the final boss.
And I'm an asshole. Go for it.
Yeah, like, I think that he has remorse. That doesn't make him a good person, but maybe he's starting to see the error of his ways by the end of the game. I don't know. But when it comes to Adachi, like, you can help him get away with it, which unlocks an entirely new ending. I think stuff like that is really cool.
And that is really amazing. Creepy, but amazing.
He's the best villain in the Persona games. And
I agree.
Like, so delving into his kind of past is a good creative choice, I want to say. So anyway, yeah. So that's one thing with the dungeons. Like, I just think that the social links and the day-to-day of going to school is more important than the actual dungeon exploration. And while Persona 5 definitely has better dungeons, I don't know if it matters as much. The one where you're like the mob boss dungeon,
uh-huh.
Like that was a good dungeon. It was also really long.
Yeah, I have to admit they are all quite long. Although they're all very interesting in their design. Mm. Like you still have some of the best ones coming up, and one of the creepiest ones, frankly.
So your primary argument for Persona 5 is they've refined everything, they've built everything, up. Like, you can point to things that are definitively better than Persona 4, and so therefore, yes. Like, it's just the more evolved version of Persona 4.
I think so, although I still concede to a lot of your points, particularly I think Persona 5, like we've discussed, has good characters. I like them all, except they don't have that same bond that they had in 4. I don't exactly know why that is. I'd have to look more into that. I'm not saying they don't have any bond at all, but you know what I mean. And Persona 4 definitely has the better villain. I won't say any more than that. But otherwise, I just enjoyed myself more with Persona 5. I loved my time with Persona 4 as well, although I did play them side by side and kind of had a really good chance to compare.
So I suppose we haven't really discussed the elephant in the room, which is the whole how it handles character, like how Persona 4 handles character arcs like Kanji. Like we devoted an entire podcast episode about this, so I don't want to spend like the next hour rehashing that entire conversation. What are your thoughts on that?
Basically the gay panic.
The gay panic Kanji aspects of it. I mean, which are definitely like lighter in Persona 5.
Yeah, they're not perfect by a long shot, but they are definitely lighter in Persona 5, which is nice. I think I just remember there was an incident with NPCs and like, haha, look how gay they are. Aren't they crazy and predatory? But thankfully, there wasn't any like ongoing gay jokes about like, ew, don't touch me, you might be gay, which is really a shame that was even part of Persona 4, because Kanji was such an interesting, great character. And I think they really could have gone somewhere with that whole thing. Just, you know, hey, shut the hell up, Yusuke. I'm just a dude who likes feminine things because I was raised with a mother who's a seamstress. Go dunk your head. You know what I mean?
Yeah. We've talked at some length about the character of Kanji and how the character of Kanji definitely has some like serious gay panic. Apparently Troy Baker played Kanji like he is gay, which I found interesting. So the gay panic aspect is unfortunate, but I think there's like some worthwhile things going on there where he is learning to embrace maybe the fact that, hey, he can do things that are stereotypically feminine and it's not a bad thing.
Oh, like, yeah.
He can be a masculine dude who likes freaking sewing and he's good at it. That, to me, is a positive thing.
That is definitely a positive thing, because I'll tell you what, I hate sewing and I'm terrible at it. So if you're good at it and you enjoy it, I don't care like what gender you are, more power to you. You're amazing. The only disappointment I really have in response to that is just they kept harping. Like, Yusuke kept on going on and on about, like, you know, I don't want to catch the gay from you, number one. Number two, Naoto, that's it. I really, really, really didn't like the bathhouse scene with her. That really made me seriously uncomfortable.
Naoto's, you mean when they're trying to get her to wear the swimsuit?
They're trying to force her into get naked in the bath, and she's just like really, really uncomfortable with it. And they're just like, come on, you know, and they're just kind of grabbing at her. And it's like, God, leave her alone, for Christ's sake.
Naoto's an interesting case because, I mean, we also talked about this at some length, but like, she is clearly extremely uncomfortable, like, with her femininity, and it puts it out that I think the message that the game is trying to say is essentially, look, Naoto like is a girl who wants to be like a rad detective, and she thinks she can't be that because even though, because she thinks that's like a masculine thing, so therefore she has to be masculine. But it's okay. Like, she can totally, it's totally fine. She can be whatever she wants. But the character is still self-evidently very uncomfortable with, like, presenting exactly. as female. And yeah. the game, like, is trying to get laughs out of her forcing her into that uncomfortable position. And yeah. it made me feel a little self-conscious, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, me too. It's like, I, even though I do identify as, like, a, you know, cisgender, mostly straight female, it's just there are certain aspects that really made me connect to Naoto because... if I put on any sort of feminine clothing, I feel very much like an imposter. Like, mm-hmm. I don't belong. I shouldn't be doing this. I'm doing something terrible. So I can very much see where she was coming from. And just having that kind of turn to a joke made me kind of angry.
Hmm. Yeah, Naoto is an interesting character. Like, I think that's like the biggest holdup with a lot of people for Persona 4. Mm-hmm. is like those two particular storylines, right? And
right.
I don't know, like, that you can easily dismiss them. And I don't know if, like, it's disqualifying. Like, does it outweigh, like, all the good about Yukiko and Chie's relationship, for example?
Right. Yeah, it's not an easy answer by any means.
Turns out media is complicated and there's no hard and fast, like, thing, like... Like, you got to weigh a whole bunch of different components. And, yeah, like, I it's hard for me to look at anything in Persona 4 and be like, this is disqualifying. It has
no,
this
exactly.
thing, and therefore it cannot be on this list. But I do think that they deserve to be called out, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Life is hard. How dare it be?
So I guess what it gets down to, Nadia, is, like, I'm still torn. Like,
yeah.
Like, I think either one of these could be in the spot.
You know, I totally agree, and I think some people are probably going to be like, hey, that's a cop-out, but well, sorry, we tried. We had this big, long discussion for you.
Gonna put a Persona game here, because I think Persona 4 is one of the best dang JRPGs of the past 15 years. Fight me.
It is definitely one of the most important ones. I will say it has, like, kind of that important status. I mean, 5 does as well, of course, but 4 brought in a whole bunch of people, and so did 5, but 4 really kind of paved the way.
I think 4 paved the way, but 5 was the real breakout.
Yeah.
Like, people were, like, kind of going, oh, cool, 4. Like, 4 started the word of mouth, and, like, it became more and more popular, but it was the popularity of 4 that galvanized so many people to check out mm-hmm. 5, that gave Atlus the green light to really throw everything they had into promoting it, right? And made it
right.
a big deal when it ultimately came out. And when, you know, like... It spurred a lot of debate about various elements of it, and there were plenty of people who came away going, I didn't actually like Persona 5. In fact, it wasn't to my taste, but enough people loved it that it ended up on a lot of Game of the Year lists. And
yeah, absolutely.
I think the thing with... I'm going back to where I was originally, which is that Persona 5 has only been out for a year, and mm-hmm. I feel like I'm still turning a lot of the things that about it over in my mind. And I'm curious to see, like, what I'm still remembering about it in a couple years.
Right.
I think that Persona 4, like, I played that game 5 years ago now. And and there's still a ton that I really love about it. And I think it holds up really well. Like, I was mm-hmm. looking at YouTube videos, like, just today, just to kind of refresh myself and brush myself up. And I'm like, oh, I remember that scene, and I remember that moment. And... Like, even though it's on the Vita, and I wish it were on Switch or something like that.
Yes,
like,
please.
I wouldn't have a hard time recommending it. Like, I think that out of a lot of the games that we've talked about on this list so far, I think that it's pretty easy to recommend to somebody right now.
Yeah, definitely. It deserves to be, like, at the number 9 spot easy.
I don't know which one I would recommend to somebody, Persona 4 or Persona 5.
That's the hard one, isn't it? I would personally recommend 5, because... Even though 4 does have the better character interactions, better translations, better story, I feel like if you don't know a Persona game, like 5 is the flash and wow of 5 might really get you into it. But then again, like I think Hirin, our guides person, he did not like 4 after 5. Like he loved 5 and then he tried 4 and he didn't like it.
Didn't he like 3 the best? It seems like he likes 3 the best. Because he played it. Hiren is adorable because he's like 22 and
he's a child.
He is playing all of these old games now that he never really got to experience. Like, he was born after Link's Awakening came out, for example.
Oh, my God.
Like, I think Breath of the Wild was his first Zelda game. And so he was, like, asking for advice on what to play. And we're like, dude, get a 3DS. You can play, like, every Zelda game on there and, like, tons of other games. And he's, like, he likes anime, so he likes My Hero Academia and that kind of thing. And so, like, we're suggesting things that he played, like, all of the Persona games now, and, like, he has opinions on them. So it's been a lot of fun watching him kind of get into them. But I do find it interesting that Persona 3 was the one he gravitated to. Like, he seemed to really like Persona 3.
I didn't know he even played it. So that's actually very interesting that he would like 3 and 5, but not 4.
Because he had a Vita, and so he was playing it. He was playing a P3 Portable on that. Because he was like, which one should I play, Fez or Portable? And, like, Katie and I were like, Portable. Yeah, go through that one. Portable lets you play as a girl. Like, I will say that much.
That's pretty cool.
So yeah, like, I think I'm going to be kicking punting this one just a tiny bit. What I'm going to do is I'm going to put this episode up and basically kind of open up the floor to you guys. And of the two, like, which one do you think kind of deserves to be enshrined on this list, I guess. I mean,
yeah,
it's an interesting question. I think both of them are fine RPGs in their own rights, and
definitely
certainly significant and wonderful in their own right. But yeah, no, like, I'm genuinely torn. All right, well, that was an interesting conversation, Nadia. As usual, we're going to have some emails and comments from people. P-Dub's like, man, I'm excited if Baldur's Gate 2 just barely makes it to the top 10. Can't wait to hear what those other choices are. And SammyJ9 went through and made some predictions. Are you ready for this? Okay.
Yes.
So they said that Planescape Torment, a Final Fantasy game, and Fallout 1 or 2, based on them being mentioned on previously as being on the list. And games that, quote, they think that we've mentioned are basically confirmed, which are 3, Chrono Trigger, which leaves 4 more. So if I'm speculating, probably Suikoden 2 and maybe a Dragon Quest game. Still leaves a couple unknowns, though. Edit, maybe Secret of Mana or a Persona game. Place your bets.
They all won.
M. Ganai says, I anticipate System Shock 2 and Deus Ex in the top 10. Please no Witcher 3. And to which I replied, Deus Ex has already been done.
Well, yep. It's passed. Its time has come.
Tabra Karn says, I've played both Baldur's Gate and Baldur's Gate 2 Enhanced Editions in the past year. After only playing about 8 years, Tabra Karn says, I've played both Baldur's Gate and Baldur's Gate 2 Enhanced Edition in the past year. After only playing about 8 hours of each when they originally came out on PC, I can say with certainty that they still hold up and hold their own against any of the newer games that have come out in the recent isometric CRPG revival. Pacing is much quicker than I had remembered, and the game is just packed with content. Every side quest is fleshed out with more story details that enhance the world, but it doesn't bog the game down. There are no simple fetch quests. Everything has a purpose. And kudos to Beamdog to adding additional quests and companion characters into the game in a seamless way. And Alarin says, excellent addition of Mr. Goodfellow this week. Thanks for the conversation. Nadia, we're getting close. We are getting close to the end of the year conversations.
Yeah, we're getting very close. We're actually drafting our end of the year lists and everything like that.
Yep, I'm playing the last couple games of the year right now for review, which is very exciting. And we're going to do something a little different in December. We are going to have a bunch of people on, and we are going to have a full-blown Game of the Year discussion on this podcast. It's not just going to be RPGs. It's going to be all of the games, and it's going to be a special game on the list because we don't have a flagship podcast anymore because I don't have time to edit 2 podcasts a week, and it was also taking up like a good chunk of the staff for like most of Wednesday.
We'd be gone. Like, okay, like someone would break major news. Hey, who's writing this? Nobody.
But it still seems a bummer to have a Game of the Year podcast discussion since we have a podcast. So We're going to do that. We are going to have a very special episode, and it's going to be coming out in the next couple weeks, so that'll be a lot of fun. In the meantime,
that'll be fun.
It's about time to start taking stock of the year 2018 in RPGs, talking about it, seeing how we felt about all the games that came out, picking some of our favorites, and also continuing on with the top 25 RPG countdown, which is oh so close to being done. We're not that far. We're going to be done in early 2019. It seems impossible. Feels like we've been doing this forever, Nadia.
When did we start? Was it like the summer?
It must have been the summer. Yeah, I think it might have been May.
Wow.
Yeah. But
back when it was warm and sunny.
Even when it's done, it will always be in our heart. Let us know what you think. Persona 4, Persona 5 in the comments. And I'm sure I'm going to get plenty of people who are like, Persona 3! So, so let us know. In the meantime, you can find us on all of the social medias and all of that kind of thing. _CatPot at Naughty Oxford, US GamerNet. Make sure to leave us a review. We always appreciate that and it makes us feel good. And of course, it helps the visibility of the podcast. But until next week, we'll be back again as always. And for Nadia and myself, thanks for listening. Happy adventuring.